Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, we're going to look at the coronavirus 19. What's really going on? So much misinformation, so much damage, both from the virus itself, especially to older and sick people, and confusion. The entire world is locked down. This has caused an economic collapse unlike anything in recorded history. Was it necessary? Should there be new approaches to this? Joining us from Duluth, Minnesota is Dr. Gary Kohls, that's K-O-H-L-S. He is a medical doctor. He is now retired. He had a long career, and he specialized in the first part of his career in traditional medicine, but then towards the end of his career, the last 10 years, he began to work in traumatic stress disorders, brain malnutrition, non-pharmaceutical approaches to mental health, and neurotransmitter disorders, neurotoxicities, especially from psychotropic drugs. He focused on the dangers of vaccines and environmental toxins and food additives and what they do to the human body and our biochemistry. He has a strong scientific background. He is the past president or a member of the International Center for the Study of Psychology and Psychiatry, also Mind Freedom International and the International Society for Traumatic Stress Studies. He does a weekly Duty to Warn column, many columns, in fact, and they appear on his website and are archived at duluthreader.com/articles/categories. Nice to have you with us today, Dr. Kohls.
Thank you. Good to be here, Gary. I'm honored to be on your show.
I'd like to go through several of the issues that I believe we need clarity on, both the problem and what could be potential solutions. Let me give a brief overview for the audience. And as people know, on this particular hour, there are no interruptions. I give longer, overarching initial questions and then stay silent so that you have a chance to really reveal the answers without any rushing in full context. First, we have the coronavirus itself. We do not know at this time for certain where it was actually created. We don't know if it was just, let's say, something that happened through a bat infection, possibly the bat infecting pigs, that is still a question that is open, or whether it was accidentally released through the contamination of one of the workers at the Wuhan viral laboratory, which is their top laboratory in China, and then infected people. The Chinese government has not been forthright and open about it. In fact, we know that they've destroyed important records and also were disingenuous about the actual number of original infections. But because this was new and not their typical coronavirus, of which the cold and other conditions are manifestations, we began to panic. And word came that we didn't have to wear masks, we didn't have to wear gloves, we didn't have to distance ourselves, you could travel, all of which was misinformation. And that was through the World Health Organization, whose director is closely aligned both ideologically and politically with the Chinese government. That said, by the time we realize we should be monitoring people, we should have antibody tests, we should be able to test everyone coming in, it had already entered all over the world. Interesting, because China quarantined people from leaving that whole area, but didn't quarantine people from leaving China to go everywhere else in the world. And so by the time we started to realize some people were getting sick and dying, it was too late. It had spread. Today, we have misinformation. For example, they began to qualify virtually all deaths if there is a coronavirus suspicion as corona deaths, and hence comorbidities. A person that was a senior citizen, the normal lifespan is somewhere between 79 and 80, 81, and the average death was close to 81. So these people were at the end of their normal life. But they also had one, two, or even three major diseases. Any one of those three, let alone all three, would have sped up their death process. These were people either in nursing homes, retirement centers, assisted living centers, and in very polluted parts of the world, including Italy, which became the second most, spreading of the country outside of China. And the deaths were reported to be very high. What no one was paying attention to, that these were very old people who already were in the death process. Now, they did not have an accurate test at that time. They didn't even have a PCR test. But as a result of that, virtually anyone who died from these conditions were called the COVID-19, and that's bad science. I'm going to ask you to address that. How in the world can we trust the CDC, Anthony Fauci, the Surgeon General, the National Institutes of Health, and the World Health Organization if they're combining normal deaths from aging and disease with the virus? You have to have it separate. Otherwise, it's bad science. It's bad epidemiology. Because what they're not doing is they didn't take an equal sample of the number of people who were infected who were healthy and old and compare them with healthy and sick. And in any epidemic, the sickest are always the first to die. We did not see corresponding death in every age group, especially people who are younger and healthier. But they said it would be equal for everyone to get infected and sick and could die. They were wrong on that. Then they told us that we had to wear masks after they told us not to wear masks. But then we didn't have the masks. Then they said we had to be tested, but there were no tests. Then they said, well, now that we have a test, and if you have the antibody, then you're okay. But then many organizations, including the World Health Organization, have said, hold on. Most people have gotten the virus and don't even know they had it. Therefore, it's not as deadly as originally thought. And therefore, the death count total will be far less, about 0.1 to 0.3%, or what a normal year of influenza and pneumonia would be. Well, every year when there's a flu season, people have an option to do the flu vaccine, which I am not a supporter of, or not. But we don't have a pandemic alert. And therefore, about anywhere in the United States, between 38,000 to 80,000 people will die. But you don't lock down the entire society. A gross overreaction. Because now we're finding out from multiple statistical analysis that many, many more people were infected and didn't know it because there were no symptoms. Their natural immune system was able to handle it. But does that mean then that they have antibodies? We don't know. We've only tested about 1% of the American population. Until we test everybody, we won't know if the antibodies are protective or not, and that will take probably a year. But everybody rushes for the drugs to treat it, and the vaccines to prevent it, without the evidence that the person's natural immune system could probably do more. So that's an overview. And now we're seeing the destruction of millions of people's incomes, about 22 million. And it's not like flipping a light switch tomorrow and everybody goes back to work, because there'll be tens of millions of people who don't have a job to go back to because small, intermediate, even some large companies are going broke. Why? Because we're an over-indebted nation. We live on debt. People who have low incomes are living off their credit cards. Now they're maxed out. Corporations borrow money, huge amounts of money, to stay in business, to build their inventories, create their marketing programs, to pay their employees. So they're not able to support their debt service fees. They're going bankrupt. So we're going to see, I'm guesstimating, about 30 million Americans within the next 2 months who won't have a job to go back to. And there's no place for them to work elsewhere in the industries because the whole industry has been adversely affected. You've got too many people for too many spots. No one has thought through this. You're looking at anywhere from $10 to $20 trillion just to get us through this initial phase of this economic disaster. And yet, that was not planned. And the poorest people are going to be the least likely to be reimbursed. So those are some of my overviews of this mess. And now individuals are coming forward one at a time, including a professor at Stanford University, who's saying that they found in the serological study antibodies to 50 to 85 times more people than previously thought in Santa Clara County, California, resulting in a COVID-19 lethality of 0.2% or even lower in the range of a severe influenza. And according to the data from the best-studied countries such as South Korea, Iceland, Germany, and Denmark, the overall lethality of COVID-19 is between 0.1% and 0.4%, and thus up to 20 times lower than initially assumed by the World Health Organization. A Medscape review shows that common cold infections caused by coronaviruses typically decline at the end of April, with or without a lockdown, because people are outside, they're getting more sunlight, they're exercising, more clean air. An important distinction concerns the question of whether people die with or indeed from the coronaviruses. Autopsies show that in many cases, the previous illness or illnesses were an important or decisive factor, but the official figures usually do not reflect that and give it all to coronavirus, which is fraudulent. So nobody's speaking about the vaccine interference, including people who may have gotten the flu vaccine and then been more susceptible to the coronavirus. Studies published by the United States military and years earlier by the University of Hong Kong showing that those vaccinated with the flu shot had a much higher risk of contracting other respiratory illnesses, including coronavirus. Then throw in air pollution, and suddenly it changes the dynamics of how many people are susceptible. And I'll give you one last example. The community in northern Italy that had the greatest number of deaths per capita were in the most polluted single area of all of Europe. They were senior citizens. They did not have proper medical care. Many of them were in acute conditions when they died, and all of them were attributed to the coronavirus. So when people had already been at their lifespan with very, very deadly diseases in a polluted environment, which contributes to death, 9 million people die each year from air pollution, and you give it all to the coronavirus, then to me that is political. So I'm concerned. I'd like to have you now go through your concerns, showing as a researcher, as a physician, as someone who has done a lot of work, take us through the deconstructing of what we should and should not accept concerning the coronavirus. The form is yours.
Well, thanks, Gary. You summarized things really well. And I think your point about how we really don't know what is actually going on, plus the fact that we have a massive propaganda effort that has now shaped our governors and our mayors and even our presidents, I suppose, views of what is going on. They are making rash decisions on inadequate and flawed information. The concept of garbage in, garbage out. What we have is experts, so-called experts, who are deeply influenced by the pharmaceutical industry, the profit-making corporations that look at ways to make money, whether the stock market crashes or whether it's going up, or what crisis is going on. They're looking for ways to profit from it. So, everybody has to look at the truism that says, follow the money. Who pays the piper calls the tune. And look at the fact that everything is a rich man's trick. I use that term a fair amount because I stumbled upon a long 3-hour video online that with that title, Everything's a Rich Man's Trick. It kind of explains everything from 9/11, JFK assassination, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm also heavily influenced in trying to assess what's really going on by a quote from Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who's a hero of both of ours, I'm sure. He says, the FDA receives 45% of its annual budget from the pharmaceutical industry. The World Health Organization gets roughly 50% of its budget from private sources, including the pharmaceutical industry and its allied foundations. And the CDC, frankly, is a vaccine company. It owns 56 vaccine patents and buys and very profitably. It distributes $4.6 billion in vaccines annually, and they don't do that at a loss. They do the distributions through the Vaccines for Children program, which represents over 40% of the CDC's total budget. The American Academy of Pediatrics, he says, another author, J.B. Handley, says, American Academy of Pediatrics, AAP, derives a majority of its outside contributions, estimated more than $25 million per year, from pharmaceutical companies that make vaccines. The pediatricians that the AAP represents derive the majority of their annual revenues from the administration of vaccines to their pediatric patients. So you can, everybody who's listening can understand how money influences everything. And then, of course, when we look at the purveyors of the mass media, CBC, ABC, NBC, and even NPR, have huge influences by Bill Gates Foundation, the pharmaceutical industry, the high-tech industries like Verizon. I just found out about a week ago that Verizon has purchased HuffPost, the Huffington Post, which ensures that once honorable news outlet never speaks about the dangers of 5G or even 4G. So big money silences the free press, which is no longer the free press. So many of the articles that I write, and, you know, I have been generating once a week for our alternative news weekly here in Duluth, Minnesota. but I've been kind of forwarding a lot of articles almost every day under my byline, Duty to Warn, although I don't take any credit for it. And by the way, I don't make any money writing this column. But I am finding myself compelled to forward information that is written by other people out to my network of recipients every day or sometimes twice a day. I've been impacted, for one thing, by a book you wrote in 2003 called Germs, Biological Warfare, and Vaccinations, which I was just reading again this morning. I have it heavily underlined, so I give you credit for a lot of the information that I know from you, Gary. Thank you again. But my practice was involved with people who had been iatrogenically diseased. Iatrogenesis means a doctor cause or drug cause or vaccine cause or surgery cause. Anyway, it's the medical profession that causes illnesses. And one of the columns that I wrote a few months ago was that iatrogenic disorders represents the third most common. And I could prove that by the calculations that I documented in the article. So doctors and their drugs and vaccines are killing almost as many people as those that die from heart disease and cancer, which are number one and two causes of death. If I had the right statistics, I think we could all agree that doctors and their drugs and vaccines are the major cause of disability and illness, even far beyond heart disease and cancer. I just came to that conclusion after being in medical practice for 4 years, the last 10 years of which were dealing with every single my patients, virtually, I can't think of any exceptions, came to see me because of iatrogenic disorders, and mostly it was the psychiatric drugs that had caused them to be sick and addicted and ill and chronically ill and dying. And so those were all iatrogenic disorders. And I know that you've written a lot about the dangers of all chemicals that one swallows or is injected with. And if they're doctor-prescribed drugs, they are particularly deadly because physicians have an inherent trust in their physicians, which is misplaced in most cases, I'm sure. So that kind of got me thinking and reading books such as yours and listening to authors that were not biased by drug industry money. I then all of a sudden came to realize how deadly the vaccine industry was in the sickening of patients that I had seen in the past, didn't realize that they were ill, although in my defense, I did not prescribe vaccines very often in my family practice career, most of which was spent before the early 90s. So that was far earlier than what has been now escalating as far as the vaccines that are given to infants. I don't feel very guilty because the CDC and the American Academy of Pediatrics recommendations for those vaccines was still amounting to sublethal, or at least I did not see any diseases that I attributed to the vaccines that I had prescribed. We gave minimal number of vaccines. I practiced in the northern Minnesota, which is underpopulated and kind of behind the times, thankfully, in many cases. So we weren't as up to date as urban areas and fully vaccinated.
Dr. Coles, I want to bring it back. We only have about 40 minutes left. I want us to focus just on the coronavirus now for a moment and what's wrong about it. Let me give you a few more insights here and take it from there. A study in Nature magazine, a highly respected magazine, comes to the same conclusion I mentioned earlier, that South Korea, Iceland, Germany, and Denmark, they had a death toll of only 0.1 to 0.4%. And even for the Chinese city of Wuhan, initially the higher values for Wuhan were obtained because many people with only mild or no symptoms were not recorded. 50 to 80% of test positives individuals remain symptom-free. Therefore, if it was really as lethal as we were told, everyone who would test positive would have gotten very sick or died. Well, up to 80% of people who test positive don't even have any symptoms. They didn't even know they were sick. And even among 70 to 79-year-olds, only 60% remain symptom-free, and about 60%, that's very high. And they have even mild symptoms when they do show. Now, mind you, that's a big difference between someone who is 70 and healthy, as many Americans are, and people around the world, and 70 and you've smoked or drank or had a bad diet, didn't exercise, and you're suffering from dementia and other conditions, and they didn't separate out these. Also, the median age of the deceased in most countries, including Italy, is over 80 years of age. And only 1% of the deceased had no serious illnesses. That meant 99% of the people who had the virus also were dying. So the age and risk profile of deaths thus essentially corresponds to normal death. So then I started to look at the normal death. Everyone who died in the United States, everybody who dies in all these countries, and there's no spike in any of them. So what they're doing is, I believe that they are bringing together these comorbidities into the statistical analysis, and they shouldn't do that. No legitimate science would do that. Why they're not doing it right, I don't know. Also, the people in nursing homes. We were told first there were 7,000 deaths in nursing homes. Now it's jumped up. One figure I saw was almost 13,000. Now, even at 7,000, that means at 20 to 25% of all deaths in the United States are by people in nursing homes. They're there to die. And then they're visited by people, until they stopped it, who would bring the virus into them, and then that person would have the virus, and that could be a contributing factor. But it wasn't the factor. The factor is what brought them to a nursing home at the end of their life in the first place. And good science would would separate out those. Now, normally, overall death in the United States is about 8,000 Americans die every 24 hours. In Germany, it's 2,600 people die every 24 hours. In Italy, it's 1,800 people per day. Influenza death in the United States is about up to 80,000. In Germany and Italy, it's about 25,000. In Switzerland, it's about 1,500 per winter. So when you look at how many people are dying now compared to the advent of this, you know, virus, the statistics are rather the same. So we're hitting that curve where more people are infected. Therefore, that drops the number who are actually dying as a statistic. And they should really rethink what it means to be outdoors, get some sunlight, have vitamin D, vitamin C, selenium, astragalus, echinacea, licorice root extract, the things along with sunlight, exercise, and de-stressing by being able to walk on a beach instead of arresting a guy alone on a beach. Even today, Tom Brady was alone on a football field just training, and they went over to take him, police went over to take him off the field. And they arrested a guy on a beach in California. This is absurd. In Colorado, they arrested a guy, and now they're closing, the governor's closing all the health food stores in California. The one place you should be able to shop that's going to put time on your side, they're closing down. This is just purely political. So up to 15% of doctors and nurses currently have to self-quarantine, even if they develop no symptoms. Now, most of those people will be fine. But we're not looking at what we can learn from this. We're going through these draconian measures. And an important distinction concerns the question of whether people die with or from the coronavirus. And autopsies show that in many cases, the previous illnesses are what was really killing the people. Well, then separate that fact. Don't include that fact with coronaviruses. That's like saying, oh, wow, Jim fell out of a 20-story building. Unlucky him. Hit the pavement. They took him to the hospital. He was already dead. But they test him. He tested positive for the antibodies, so he must have died of the coronavirus. No, he died by hitting the concrete at 80 miles an hour from 20 stories. Oh, Linda walked in front of a train, and whoo, that was the end of Linda. But at the autopsy, she had the coronavirus antibody. Well, then she died of coronavirus. This is how absurd we are at this moment. Would you address what you consider the positive or negative consequences of all that we're being misled to believe, and especially countries without lockdowns and bans, such as Japan, South Korea, and Sweden, that have not thus far experienced a more negative course other than what they would normally experience, and similarly, people dying who are already at death's door as a statistically significant number. I'd like for you to address these issues, please.
Yes, yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying, and I've written my columns with a lot of the same facts. The one I submitted today for this week's Duluth Reader column, I had a whole bunch of statistics, and one of them was, for instance, you know, the United States has a population of 330 million people, and as of a couple of days ago, there were 564,000 cases. That's easy to emphasize or overemphasize, 564,000 cases. Of course, those cases were maybe just assumed cases or probably test positive cases or untested, totally untested cases. But when you divide 564,000 cases with a population of 330 million, you get a risk factor of 17 chances out of 10,000 of getting the virus, getting COVID in the United States. 17 chances out of 10,000. That's a chance that most people would be willing to take and go to their health food store or go for a walk or even hug somebody, you know. 17 chances out of 10,000 is minuscule. That's hardly mentioning anything. You know, that's probably far less than our annual pandemic of influenza that we never pay much attention to. The risk of dying in the United States, so far there's 23,000 deaths but the population is 330 million. So when you divide 23,000 deaths from so-called COVID, again, most of them are either false positives or false negatives or just assumed deaths, so we don't have any idea what they actually died of. And when you die in a nursing home, those patients are pre-terminal with something. They're on death's door, or they wouldn't be in a nursing home. But when that figure is calculated, you get 0.000696 chance of getting it, or that translates to 7 chances out of every 100,000 Americans. 7 out of every 100,000 have died from COVID, and that's a chance that I'm willing to take when I go out and when I go for a walk, or if I want to go and play bridge with somebody or play tennis with someone, I'm willing to take 7 chances out of 100,000. I live in northern Minnesota. We're right at the peak of Lake Superior, where the St. Louis River enters. Our county is called St. Louis County. And we have 199,000 people in St. Louis County. But we had zero cases and zero deaths until about a month ago, when we had one nursing home had 4 deaths, and now I think we've got about 8 deaths in all of, actually that's, yeah, it's 4 deaths in all of St. Louis County. When you, and there are 2,000 cases, and as of now, we had, anyway, the incidence rate was 0.00037, and the death rate was 0.000198. You know, there's about a 0.002% chance of dying from COVID in St. Louis County. But all the information we get from our local newspapers, they have huge headlines every time there's one more person that was contracted or was diagnosed with a disease. So we are being propagandized by entities that whose interest is in not telling us the entire truth. The advertising industry, of course, you know, when you look at television ads, 70% of the revenue that major TV outlets get is from the pharmaceutical industry. And so whoever pays the piper calls the tune. And so people like you or I never get asked to be interviewed on radio or television. The experts that are always interviewed on television are perpetrators of the myths. And so the public that is addicted to mainstream media is being propagandized to believe something other than what is actually happening. So that's what's happening. And your information about how many people die every day is really important. I came across that information too. You know, the all-cause death per day in America is 7,750. India, 26,000 people die every day in India. That's last year, this year, next year. Japan has 3,600, Italy is 1,700, France 1,600, Russia 1,400, Canada 780. Sweden, 250 people die every day in Sweden, whether there's any epidemic or not. And another statistic that's interesting is that every year, if you calculated the location of deaths in America, all-cause deaths, 60% of people die in a hospital, 20% die in nursing homes, and the other 20% occur in locations outside, usually at home. So those are deaths that occur at home. And so we have to put that into context as well, that people, like I said, in nursing homes are pre-terminal. They're already over-medicated with lethal doses of diseases that have never been tested to be safe or even effective in combinations of more than one. They're all over-vaccinated. I think there's probably no nursing home in the United States that doesn't administer influenza vaccines every fall to their nursing home patients. and that Department of Defense study you mentioned that was published just a few months ago, it was completed, I think, in 2018, showed that military people in that study who got an influenza shot were far more susceptible, highly significantly more susceptible to getting a coronavirus infection. And that, of course, that study has been suppressed, and it probably got deleted from the journal it was published into by now. But we are being manipulated by an invisible government, invisible forces, that we don't even know who they are necessarily. We can strongly suspect that, but the people who are perpetuating and manufacturing the facts, quote unquote facts, are people that that don't admit that they're doing it. There are ulterior motives, whether they orchestrated the entire crisis themselves or are just trying to profit from it. We don't know yet. It would take some investigative journalism by some courageous journalist who would be able to speak out on some courageous network to get the facts.
We cannot, Dr. Coles, at this time, we don't want to speculate because then the good work that you do would be considered conspiratorial, and it's not. What we don't know is the origin of this. We have our suspicions, and there's more and more evidence that is showing that it was developed with the support of the Anthony Fauci's National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Disease with a $3.6 million grant after there was a moratorium on any more of these biological adjustments, meaning making a virus more susceptible to causing disease, making it more lethal than what it would normally be. Now, they could argue that we did that so we could try to create better drugs or better vaccines, safer. And I cannot argue that that is yes or no at this time. I have done articles in the past. In fact, I did one of the first articles published on biological warfare because I did investigative journalism and showed, for example, that in one hospital in New York City, a doctor who was associated with a biological weapons development laboratory in Philadelphia had injected dozens of people with cancer cells. He had no authority to do it. He had no permission to the patients. He was in violation of the Nuremberg Codes, and he got away with it. I exposed him. I did expose him in an article. I exposed him in a, nothing happened. And then also we showed that the Fort Detrick was not just developing defensive biological weaponry, but offensive, meaning that it could be used for offensive purpose. That's in violation of international treaties, but it didn't seem to matter. The laws governing research, development, or application are simply to be determined by the people who are in power, not what the laws or treaties suggest. The Biological Weapons Treaty, now that means that treaty supersedes U.S. law, and yet it was completely ignored and has been. So when Anthony Fauci is a part of greenlighting a $3.6 million in American money, American taxpayers pay for this, to work with the Chinese, and I'm thinking first and foremost, let's pull back a moment. Are these the same Chinese that have internment camps, re-education camps, organ harvesting camps for the Uyghurs and the Falun Gong? And they've been doing that for, I did my first program with members of the Falun Gong, a meditation group, over several hundred million participants, where they had them in hospitals, military hospitals, and they would be chained to a bed, and they would take out organ after organ until they took out the heart, in which case then they would just cremate the bodies. And they got away with it because their mindset was, we can profit from this patient and their organs, and we don't like them to begin with. And then now they're doing it with Muslims, they're doing it with Africans. There's a big racist bias in China against people who are of color. And so these are the people who engage in intellectual copyright theft and who have planted spies and malware. And so everything you could do wrong, they've done. on human rights, on global pollution, they're the number one polluter, on having over a million of their own citizens die of pollution, and yet we choose to bypass all considerations of rewarding people who are engaged in different forms of criminal and terrible behavior towards their own citizens, and then they monitor the citizens. Every single citizen is under constant scrutiny. So if you do anything they don't like, anything, suddenly you're shamed. If you get on an airplane, which they can prevent you from getting on, and you don't have the right score on a social quality score of some type, a merit system, then everyone else on that plane's phone rings and they see a picture of you on the plane and say, you're not a good citizen. Now imagine the stigma of that. And yet that is who we chose to do business with. But we didn't choose to grow organic food. We didn't choose to help them turn down the flames from all of those coal power plants that have been causing massive amounts of air particulate pollution in California and Washington State, which are harming people. No, we chose to engage in a secret program of clandestinely changing, altering. Now, what we don't know is what was the purpose of the alteration. That will come out in time, I'm sure. But the very first people who began to tell us about what was wrong died or are disappeared. They have zero tolerance for any form of dissent in China. Also, 60 Minutes Australia just broadcast a program. I just watched it. It's better than 60 Minutes America, far more hard-hitting, that shows that a Chinese spy, the only one they've ever found, came forward. You never hear of spies coming forward to whistleblow because it's an absolute death sentence. And showed that China's spy agencies, and he was one of them, undermine political candidates, get Chinese undercover agents elected to office, fund research in universities, compromise professors. Everything bad you could do, they do. Now, that's not to suggest we haven't done everything they've done, just in different ways and for different purposes through the CIA and Homeland Security and National Security Agency. I'm not suggesting we're good, they're bad, we're right, they're wrong. I'm suggesting that this is the environment where are the behavioralists? Where are the people who understand if you start funding this kind of research, and they were funding it where the woman who is the world's leading authority on bats and bat viruses transmissibility to humans, that she had done papers. And then 2 years ago, members of the State Department visited the lab and then wrote back saying, this is a dangerous environment. They're doing very dangerous work here, and that could get out into the environment and cause a pandemic. That was 2 years ago. Now, that is official. We have that information. So you're giving people money, you're working in secret, and now suddenly we have a, quote, bat-originated pandemic virus, the COVID-19. And it has infused in it, implanted in it, the HIV virus, and elements of other serious viruses, including the SARS virus. And this was not natural. The different virologists, and Vic, we have a person coming for a full hour in two more days, said you would never have this virus evolve naturally in nature. This was a genetically engineered, but was it genetically engineered for creating a vaccine, or was it genetically engineered for some weaponized biological adventure that we don't know? We don't have an answer, so I'm not going to speculate. We'll let the facts come out as whistleblowers or others come forward. But that's what we're dealing with. Now, also, we now know from the latest report out of the World Health Organization, they were claiming in March, at the end of March, that there was no evidence of aerosol dispersal of the virus. And a leading German virologist also found no aerosol and no smear infections in one study. Were they right or not? Why didn't anyone else duplicate this? Because if they were right, that would allow us to better understand how it's transmitted and what our likely contamination points are, so we could prepare ourselves, try to prevent it. Also, there are many different scientific institutions in the United States, also in Italy and in France, that they're not overrun with coronavirus people. So what we have to do is say how many people who needed heart surgery, hip surgery, needed different types of legitimate medical procedures were furloughed to another time so that everything could be for the coronavirus person. So we had better reevaluate all those people and who were needing medical attention and did not get what they needed. Now, from my perspective, I think one of the best things you could do is set up facilities specifically to work with people who are seriously ill and potentially victims of being infected, which would then increase their mortality rates. So even if you could add a week, a month, a year onto a sick person's life, I believe people are worth it. And therefore, we should have in every city of the world, we should have these clinics for acute care clinics that could hold hundreds, even thousands of patients and have all the equipment they would need, have hyperbaric oxygen therapy. That would sure as the dickens be a better situation at this point than giving people the intubation with the different respirators and some of the science now on those respirators, including the pulmonologist saying, hold on a second, not everybody benefits from this. And some people are harmed and actually could help speed up with infections and other conditions, killing people, because how the body's responding as far as the intake of air, where a person seems to be taking enough air, but it's not utilized properly, then you have to come up with other ideas. So one size fits all should not be used at this moment. And also, the virus test kits that were sent out, turns out they had a lot of errors in them. Turns out the CDC, according to New York Times Today, the CDC's own test kits were flawed because they were contaminated. And that delayed getting these more accurate tests out. So even people who were tested previously, as you said, could have as high as a 70% false positive. So we're counting people who had the virus, but based upon what might have been a false positive, so those people should be excluded. We're counting deaths of people who really died under proper examination, autopsy, and histological tests would show they didn't die principally of the virus. They died of other diseases to which the virus was merely present. And they haven't even shown how someone with heart disease would die quicker with the coronavirus. There's an association, but that doesn't mean causality. And again, they're speculating, they're guessing. So all this is just, is completely unscientific. And think of the psychological. Now, you have a background in mental health. Think of the psychology of what it means to be locked up in a closed environment. You've lost your job. You have no health insurance. You've maxed out your credit cards. And yet you have to buy food or find food for you and your family. In fact, recently it was shown that there was a video of cars stretching miles in front of a food bank in California, and the food bank ran out of food before 90% of the people, or more or less, could get any food at all. How does that affect you mentally? What do you do when you're in a home environment that itself is toxic, one of the most toxic places you could be, especially if you have the virus, is in that environment, because then you're spreading it constantly and reinfecting yourself constantly. Those are some issues I'd like for you to address, please.
Yeah, the psychological one is really so true. You know, people who are stressed and feel hopeless, some of them will become depressed and consider suicide. Some will get angry and consider violence. But most people aren't going to do nothing. They're going to be with hopelessness, and that's what is being spread with the. It's you know, it's not the fault of the virus. It's the fault of the shutdown. You know, a lot of the headlines will say it was the virus that's causing all this disruption, but it's the shutdown, the lockdown that is causing all the psychological problems. Most of us are dealing just fine with the virus. I know nobody who has even been falsely diagnosed with COVID here in Duluth, Minnesota. We have 85,000 people. But the media makes it sound like we're all at risk of getting it and dying. So we're being propagandized to be fearful. But the fear then, like I say, psychologically generates abnormal responses, which in the worst case could be anarchy. violence with guns, people doing burglaries and stealing food or money or whatever. So it's not going to be a happy outcome. one thing that I think is not fully understood is that the trust we have in the test kits, whether they're PCR test kits to make the diagnosis of a coronavirus infection, or the antibody, which are blood tests, which are much more complex and much more expensive. Nobody so far is admitting how many hundreds and hundreds of dollars either one of them is costing, but the PCR test is at the minimum $200 a test, probably $300, depending on, of course, how cornered the market is by the drug industry, who's going to be profiting from all the testing that is being planned. But the study from Iceland where they tested, they did PCR tests on everybody in the whole nation, which is only, 500,000 or 600,000 people, I guess. But 50% of the people that tested positive to the PCR test had no symptoms and never developed any symptoms. So that was a false, those were false positive tests that needed to be discounted. But knowing that about one-fourth of all common colds are caused by coronaviruses, and nobody has shown me the published evidence that the PCR test can tell the difference between a benign coronavirus of a common cold, many of which we are carriers of that virus, and the difference between that and the more serious COVID. So I think that in the study in Iceland supports the notion that normal, healthy people that just may have a benign coronavirus in their saliva or their nose, we're testing and not differentiating the difference between the common cold and COVID-19. That's a serious problem. Nobody wants to discuss that among the so-called experts. So, and then the new antibody test, which the Mayo Clinic in my state has been working on for the last few months, and now finally has a product that they're mass producing. It still hasn't been FDA approved, however. None of the PCR tests for COVID-19 have been FDA approved, and the vaccines, of course, will not be FDA approved probably ever. They'll be fast-tracked. All this stuff is being fast-tracked. But the false negativity of the antibody test is estimated to be at least 40%. That's an estimate. And that makes sense because the development of antibodies after a coronavirus infection, that nobody knows how long that takes. Some people never develop antibodies. Some people it may take a couple of weeks or a month. Nobody knows how long it takes before the antibodies will show up. And some people will only develop numbers of antibodies that might not even show up on the test. So that's probably going to be 40% false negatives. When people get their antibody tests, they will be reassured that they are clear or will need to be at the front of the line for the vaccines, the fast-track vaccines, in a year or two. So we got garbage coming in, garbage going out. The money, the people in charge, the invisible government, are the billionaires of the world that are not supposed to be, they're not elected by us, although their money has influenced the vast majority of our legislators and probably our mayors as well. So they're, who pays the piper calls the tune. We have to be aware that the experts that are speaking to us or propagandizing us maybe have conflicts of interest, and we have to understand that we probably should not be believing the people who are so conflicted.
Dr. Gary Kohls, K-O-H-L-S, my guest from Duluth, Minnesota. You can get his Call a Duty to Warn, a weekly column that he sends out over the internet. Go to Duluth, D-U-L-U-T-H, Reader, reader.com/articles/categories 200, and duty to warn, and you'll get them. Thank you very much for being with us today. It's been very enlightening.
Good luck.
I'm Gary Noll. That brings us up to the end of this program. Thank you all very much for listening. Have a nice day.